Now he says here in chapter 12, Ephraim feedeth on wind and falleth after the east wind. Now that refers to an east wind that comes out over that burning Arabian desert and blows through that land, friends, and you think that you've already landed in the wrong place when you're there, when that wind begins to blow. And God says, I intend to let the Assyrians come through that land like that. And then he goes on to say, chapter 12, now verse 2, the Lord hath also a controversy with Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways, according to his doings will he recompense him. Now he took his brother by the heel in the womb, and by his strength he had power with God. That has been something that has always been questioned, of why God put it in his word that Jacob took hold of his brother Esau's heel. Isn't it interesting today that medicine and psychology have said that probably the most important period of a man's life is when he's in the womb, and that even their character is being formed as well as a human body? And this little fellow began to reveal something that was there. He wanted to be the firstborn. Esau beat him out, and he was the firstborn. This boy wanted to be the firstborn. I don't know how to explain it other than that, my friend, that it was in his heart from the very beginning. And he wrestled at his birth. But God had to wrestle with him later on at Peniel in order that he might lay hold of this man and get him and be able to bless him. Yet he had power over the angel and prevailed. How did he? Was he a better wrestler? Would he appear on TV today as an outstanding wrestler? No, Jacob wasn't much of a wrestler. He had his ears pinned back and his shoulders pinned to the mat. God had him down, but he won. You know how he won? By surrendering. And you can fight God all you want to, but you'll never win until you surrender to him. Even the Lord God of hosts, the Lord, is his memorial. I haven't time to go in that, but that's a marvelous statement, by the way, that we have there. Therefore turn thou to thy God, keep mercy and justice, and wait on thy God continually. You see, the name Jehovah, the Lord, is a name God gave to them as a memorial. He says, you'll always know me by my name. I'm Jehovah, the self-existing one, the living God. Doesn't need an image or an altar. Doesn't even need man at all. Now he says here, therefore turn thou to thy God. Keep mercy and justice and wait on thy God continually. In other words, these people needed to practice what they preach. The interesting thing is, this worship of Satan today, and this giving over to homosexuality today, is leading to the basest of crimes. You see, only by coming to the living God can mercy and justice and waiting upon God continually. They go together. He's a merchant. The balances of deceit are in his hand. He loveth to oppress. Dishonest in business. And that is not something that God approves either, by the way. And Ephraim said, yet I am become rich. I have found substance in all my labors. They shall find no iniquity in me that is sin. In other words, he's able to buy off. He'd made his money dishonestly, and he thought he was being blessed to God. And I that am the Lord thy God from the land of Egypt will yet make thee to dwell in tabernacles as in the days of the solemn feast. God says, I'm not through with you. I'll not give you up. Now let me drop down to verse 14. I'll pick up verse 11 on the way down. Is there iniquity in Gilead? Surely they are vanity. Now Gilead is the place where there should be a balm, a Gilead to heal the wound. But Gilead now is a place of sin. And you'll notice now, as I drop down to verse 14, Ephraim provoked him to anger most bitterly. Therefore shall he leave his blood upon him, and his reproach shall his Lord return unto him.